This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right, Gio. And like you, and I think like most Americans, I think we're all exhausted of what we're watching on TV. And I don't want to make this into some sort of a referendum on what's going on out there. We know what's going on out there. We know that there are peaceful protests. And then we know after dark, everything changes. And that's why an 11 p.m. curfew in New York City is not the right time. It's got to be earlier than that. It's got to be, you know, right at, you know, it's got to be at 8 o'clock. It's got to be at 7 o'clock. It's got to be at a time where the police can see what's going on and they can start making arrests if people are going to be violating a curfew. That's the bottom line. And nobody, again, I don't know how many times we have to say this. Nobody is saying don't protest. Everybody is saying don't loot and don't riot and don't throw things at the police. That's basically what everybody's saying all across the country, much like everybody all across the country is condemning what happened in Minneapolis. And I just, you know, I couldn't wait to hear what Terrence Floyd was going to say about his brother George yesterday at their vigil that they had right across the street from the Cup Deli. And I have to say, I don't know if I could have done what he did. He was emotional. He was measured. He also said, look, there are times where I want to bust things up, but this is not the time. And I don't know how many people are listening. I don't know if people are paying attention. Well, I think there are some, but I think there are also others that have really are using things like George Floyd's death as an excuse. So I take my hat off to Terrence Floyd yesterday. His words were strong and they were powerful. I wish more people and I hope more people listen to them. I still think that our measured response to a lot of what we have been seeing at night is the wrong tact. And many will say it's property versus people. But there are people out there that are literally trying to hurt police officers and trying to kill police officers. And that, as a society, we cannot stand for no matter what's going on, you know. The other thing that came out of yesterday's press conferences was the fact that former New York City medical examiner Michael Bodden went there to investigate and came back with his own findings about what killed George Floyd. And it was a asphyxiation, according to him. You know, I don't need those medical reports. I guess some certain people do. I know what I saw. I saw murder on the streets in Minneapolis. And, you know, that officer is paying a very, very dear price. And he has been put in maximum security right now. And you know what? Every aspect of the law is coming down on him. And every aspect of the law will come down on the other three officers. And again, officers all across this country have gone to great lengths to remain restrained, to support peaceful protest, to actually be a part of the peaceful protest. And they're doing everything they can to change the way a number of officers across this country have fought over the years. So there is major change going on. There's no question about it. The other thing I will say, too, is that thousands of companies across this country have all come out with very strong statements condemning racism. And I agree with all of that. Nobody wants racism. Nobody wants that. Everybody wants equal opportunity. Everybody wants people to have a chance to make it in life and succeed in life. And I don't know about you, but I also know that we have a confluence of very many things going on right now. One being the pandemic, two being unemployment, three being half the country hates the president, and four, you know, I think an excuse for people to go out and blow off steam and do it in the wrong way. And it is a colossal mess in many of our cities, including our very own city here in New York.
Yeah, so we see the deployment of military and National Guard in every state, and I don't know how people will react to that. I'm hoping that the force and the sight of that is going to deter folks from destroying property and trying to go after officers and throwing bricks at people. I hope that that is the case, but I was thinking yesterday, you know, when and how does it end? I mean, if you've got powerful people, and this is the problem. To me, is, you know, Terrence Floyd, the brother of George Floyd, is speaking in the way that he is. You know, the mayor of Atlanta, as we talked about, speaking in the way that she was, and it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. But the people that are doing the looting aren't interested in that stuff. In my opinion, most of those bad people that are doing the looting are not looking for justice for George Floyd. They're looking for anarchy, is what they're looking for. So when you hear the reasoned message and you see the videos of certain police officers that are kneeling down and holding the hands of those who are peacefully protesting, saying that we can change together, I mean, those are the things that I see and make me hopeful. But you know, as far as the looters go, I mean, these people, I mean, I bet you if you ask them questions about what happened in Minneapolis, the officer's name, George Floyd's name, you know, maybe some other instances between police officers and minorities over the last couple of years, they wouldn't know a damn thing about it. There's a lot of some of them do, maybe, but I keep referring back. You've got a couple people you referring back. That 20-year-old little punk that was throwing bricks through windows of a Pittsburgh police car with his Antifa thing on his face, 20-year-old kid. You think that kid was out there standing up for social injustice? No, he was not. And he was just one snapshot of the crap that's going on out there. So that's the thing that is still concerning to me, is how does it end for those people, the people that don't care about the social injustice, that are out there looking for an opportunity to destroy a city because they're angry about something else? Because I do believe that we're making progress with other things. I do believe that. Because there's so many images out there that aren't broadcast on the cable news 24/7 of real progress, of people having conversations. Like, I had to go to YouTube to watch the Atlanta, and I don't know if they played it, I'm not watching cable news all day long, but that's where I saw the Atlanta chief of police talking to people. It was on YouTube. It wasn't on the TV. You know, I go to Twitter, see some of these videos of people kneeling together and holding hands. I mean, that stuff is happening, but of course, you know, the world in chaos and smoke and bricks and all that stuff, which is also happening, that's on a loop constantly. And I just wonder when that's going to end.
Well, I mean, it is on a loop constantly, which is overwhelming, which is just exhausting mentally. It's exhausting reading any sort of social media, because the social media is just filth. It's absolutely filth, and it's filth on all sides. It's hatred on all sides. So hatred still exists. Racism is going to still exist in some way, shape, or form in somebody's heart somewhere. You wish you could touch other people as many people have been touched already. But this is, you just cannot allow what happened again last night in New York City. You just can't. In the JBL store that I've been to, and JBL has been a big supporter of our foundation, has also been a supporter of so many other foundations and support. And watching that store get smashed into, you know, watching the Chanel store in Soho get smashed into. Yeah. I mean, those things. I mean, you want to ruin a society. That's what ruins a society. I mean, people end up, you know, leaving. People, businesses end up boarding up, and it's almost impossible to come back from these things. Now, I talked to a number of people yesterday that, you know, are New York City residents, and I asked them, I said, do you think you want to stay here? Do you think you want to continue to live here? I would say at least 75% of them said yes. Said yes, we're staying. We believe in New York. New York always bounces back. New York is strong. New York has seen this before. We've been through ugliness before, and we'll get through this as well. Then there were the others that were like, you know, given the shortage of medical infrastructure, which was shown during the COVID-19 height, all the different things that are going on in the streets, the bloated budgets that are not going to be able to be refilled. You know, people can't get back to work, you know, are all like, you know, we're getting out of here. You know, this is not a place where we want to be. And that kind of broke my heart, too. I mean, I came back here. Yep. I mean, you're from, we're both from here. We both love it here. There's not a better place in the world to be than in New York State in the summertime. I don't care what part of the state you're in. We just happen to be, you know, down, you know, on Long Island, which is a beautiful place in the summertime. And it's a great place to stay home and really bear the fruits and benefits of, you know, the beautiful weather and the beaches and the great restaurants and everything else that goes on from town to town to town. And then, unfortunately, you have these things happening around us and you feel helpless and you just hope that, you know, that the police have everything that they possibly need to protect themselves and to protect the innocent that that basically aren't getting, the, you know, are sitting at home just waiting to go back to work in New York City. That's the other thing, as Governor Cuomo did say yesterday. He goes, you know, we're right in the middle of a pandemic and all of this is going on and we're trying to reopen New York City. We're trying to get the economy going. And now we're taking, again, 5 or 6, 7 steps back from people who I really don't think are doing whatever they want to do when they want to do it. And that's the sad part of it all. And think about, like, I read this morning about the two lawyers that were throwing Molotov cocktails. I mean, like, what is the mindset there? I mean, that's like ruining your life.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and a life that they had built that was a pretty decent one. I mean, you're talking about, you know, someone who's a practicing lawyer who had an Ivy League education, who seemed like everything was going their way. It doesn't mean you can't be mad about something, but to put other lives in danger and to try to blow things up, like, I don't know. I just
think, like, a guy like that, with that background, with that education, can make a difference in the world the right way.
Yeah, without blowing stuff up or stealing Chanel bags or whatever the hell's going
on. Yeah, yeah, but I mean, to throw a Molotov cocktail at a cop car, it's just mind-numbing to me that a guy would throw a future away like that, that, you know, was given, afforded every opportunity to, you know, make a life for himself, and then ends up doing that. It's like the woman that comes down from the Catskills. 27-year-old white woman out of the blue throws a Molotov cocktail at a van. I'm like, what in the world is she thinking? What has pushed her to that point? Unless she has some other background issues that I don't know, where she and police have gotten into it before, and this is her chance. She felt to be innocuous and throw a Molotov cocktail and potentially kill 4 cops. I mean, yeah. What is making people get to that point? And I know what the argument is. I know what the answer is. And it's basically changing the system. And I understand that. And there are certain people on the streets that think this is civil war. However, the far majority are peaceful protesters doing it the way that they should be doing it. And you know what? I do believe that their message is being heard by so many swaths of society, including a number, if not almost every single major company, major sports team, has put out strong statements supporting what is being said peacefully.
Yeah, and the Knicks actually have not put out a statement, and reportedly their players and employees that are upset about that. This is one of those things, though, that, like, I don't know. If you're telling me that the players and employees are upset about it, then you have to address it. I guess Jim Dolan did send an email out that basically said, like, you know, we're not qualified to talk on this stuff. But, you know, so I don't know what the hell he was thinking. But, you know, you put out one line that says that, you know, we hate racism here at the Madison Square Garden. It's as simple as that, right? I mean, it's just as simple as it with any company or any player. If you're getting pressure to say it, I mean, I feel like, you know, what is, if you stay quiet, then people make assumptions about how you feel about it. It's not that hard to put out a statement. I saw the Mets did yesterday talking about how diverse Queens was, and they put something out. And I mean, I think that is
silly.
You tell
me the Mets actually did a right thing?
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah. I mean, I understand it's just a statement. It's just something that's crafted. But I mean, it does mean a lot to a lot of people, especially if you've got minorities that are collecting paychecks from you that want to know that their employer is, feeling a certain way about this. And this is why it's so difficult for me to. I've never been in a situation where I wanted my employer to have my back socially. You know what I'm saying? I've never been in that situation, so I don't know how I would feel. Mark, you need to put out a statement to support me in this particular way. Like if I was talking to Mark Chernoff, I can't even imagine what that would be like. So like from my perspective and my shoes, I'm like, wow, you know, that's interesting that that would even matter to somebody. But I also can't speak on that because I've never been in that situation. So apparently if people feel that way and say, hey, I need the person who I work for to publicly say that they are on the same side as me, then you damn well better do it if that's important to the people that you care about.
I think this is generally an easy one to agree with.
Yeah.
I think all reasonable people that, you know, go to work every single day, try to take care of their families, try to do everything right, pay all their bills, take care of their property, and go to work every day, all reasonable people obviously believe wholeheartedly against racism. Wholeheartedly. Yeah. You know, I watched my former teammate, Frank Reich, open a Zoom conference with his team. And I did a CBS Sports Minute on it this morning because it really touched me because, you know, I know Frank and I know who Frank is. And I've known Frank, you know, for over half his life. And Frank had a ministry down in Carolina and he dealt with a lot of situations, because that's what ministers do. They deal with family problems. They preach the word of the Lord. They try to bring people together and see the good in people, you know, and that's, I always said that about Frank, that he always saw the good in everybody. No matter how bad you acted, no matter how stupid you may have been in your life, he would always find the silver lining and find good in you and try to bring the best out in you. And I felt as a human being and as a roommate of Frank, I became a better person by knowing him. And then watching him, because they put the video out on Twitter. He didn't send it to me or anything. It was out there publicly. Watching him, I basically said, man, that's my roommate, man. That's the guy that I know. That's the guy that I know that the people who play for him, the people that he has coached over his entire career since he got back into coaching, you know, love that guy. And they appreciate that guy because he's not afraid to say things that sometimes are going to be uncomfortable or maybe inconvenient, but he's also going to see the beauty in every single soul that he is around because that's his background. That's who he is. I think in a lot of ways, that's who James Brown is, who I work with at CBS. He's a minister too. He always tries to see the good in people first, you know, and he tries to find that common ground when he has a discussion with you about anything, regardless of what it may be. He wants to know who you are. He wants to know where you're from. He wants to know how you live. He likes, you know, to know about your family, things of that nature. But I also know that he has very strong views on things, but he also finds the beauty in people. And that's why, you know, watching them through this gives me great hope that there's more goodness in the world than there is hatred.
Yeah, if all of us did that, what a difference that would make to not just assume what somebody is, who they are, just based on looking at them. If you actually had the opportunity to ask some questions, where are you from? You know, what's going on? Who is your family? You know, stuff like that. And I've seen, you know, people do that, and they have a lot more patience and a lot more wisdom than I have had. Where they'll sit there and they'll actually listen to somebody for like a minute, asking them about their family. I haven't done that a lot the last couple of years because, quite frankly, you know, when you go into work in New York and you see thousands of people around every day, you try to go in and out and not have as much social interaction. And that's something maybe that I will change, because not that I'm making snap judgments on people. I don't believe that I do that, but I think that's something that when you know somebody, there was a video that's gone viral from a few years back where it's a man who's standing there. He's a black man and he's just talking about everything that he's gone through in his life. You know, he's like, I like cheese. I don't like Swiss cheese. You know, I like to play basketball. And he goes on for like 2 minutes talking about the things that he likes and doesn't like, you know, where his parents were from. And he just said, they just wanted you to get to know me. And that was it. And I thought that was such a powerful thing. So when you say those things, Frank Reich, James Brown, and the fact that they live their lives that way, I mean, that's That's a piece of advice that we could all take at this time.
I will say what's important in their heart is the religion aspect of it, and gives them a different perspective, because they are true 100% believers that there is a higher power, and that higher power, we are all created in His image. So it drives them, and it also gives them great perspective, I think. And that's one of the things that I was so proud of watching Frank do what he did yesterday. You know, and I haven't even talked to him about any of this.
Yeah.
Because I know that in the world of sports, and with the pressure that is on the athletes and the athletes getting involved, that, you know, coaches and team general managers and owners and of every sport, have to also recognize that, you know, that players are going to be emotional about this. And they are. And they have every reason to be. So, and they're trying to be as understanding and trying to be as forward as they possibly can to let them know that they're on their team. And the way Frank, worded it is that, look, man, the Indianapolis Colts essentially are a family. We're a football team, but we're a family as well. So I thought he did an unbelievable job yesterday for his team, hopefully for his city. The coach in every city has a very powerful voice and a big platform, and hopefully they use it correctly.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network, just getting started.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.